Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello and welcome back. We're sitting again in Susie's beautiful, she calls it a snug, but I call it her witch's cabin with the spinning wheel and the beautiful rugs on the carpets and the drums and the rattles and the broomstick in the corner. It is a broomstick, is it?
It is a broomstick, yes.
Beautiful handmade broomstick. Does it work or do you not use it?
It works perfectly.
And do you fly on it?
No, but I use it for cleaning things.
Quite right too. Love that.
But as in, you know, cleaning a river or not cleaning the cobwebs out of the corners here.
Yes. Oh, that's interesting. You run it through a river to clean energy.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about that?
Asks me to.
Mm.
Yeah, so the rivers here a little while ago, the rivers, the tributary of the Bovey herself and the teen asked me to go and help with my ancestral bundle, my broomstick, and my intention to please go and assist her, basically, with that intention by sweeping her clear of the aspects of separation that she was dealing with at the time in terms of trying to remind us that we are part of a living, breathing, ensouled, sentient, coherent being. And so I did.
How lovely. And when you sweep, you draw energy out. What do you do with the energy?
So I ask for it to be sent to either the place where it belongs,
mm-hmm,
or transmuted. And in fact, typically water is the great transmuter. Water is, the spirit of water is very, very, very keen for us to ally with her and for her to transmute, and her powers of transmutation are second to none.
Mm.
And so often, actually, if I'm sweeping energies that don't belong somewhere to somewhere else, water would be one of the places that they might go.
Yeah.
But on this particular occasion, she wanted the energy taken and kind of transmuted to nothing. So on this occasion, they were sent to the void.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, more usually I would be sweeping to water, not sweeping away from water.
That's fascinating. Would you teach me how to do that one day?
Mm. It's as simple as it sounds.
Yes, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. My bishop's just written a book called Reclaiming Eden, How to Communicate with Nature Spirits,
mm-hmm,
which is going to be out, I think, in October or November. So I'm very much looking forward to reading that. Mm-hmm. And maybe communing some stuff about that on this podcast. Anyway, we're actually here today to answer some questions. We have questions, which is really, really nice and sometimes challenging.
Mm.
So the first one, let's briefly deal with the kingdom issue. Okay. The idea of the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God coming into the kingdom. And you can play Bible tennis with the language as much as you like. It could mean this or it could mean that. And the whole yeshiva schools in Israel where Orthodox Jewish men debate for hours on end, what does that word mean? Because we literally do not know exactly what a word means in another language. You can very rarely translate something exactly.
Yeah.
Hopefully you can get the essence of it. But I've looked up kingdom in the Old Testament and there's two words for it. The one I know very well is Malkut, and the other one is I think it's Mamluko. I don't know how to pronounce it. But it actually means sovereignty, rulership. And oddly enough, the noun is said to be feminine.
Right, okay.
It's translated as masculine, but I think the best way to sum up the meaning of it is from the Book of Esther, which is one of the most amazing books. Don't ever read the one in the Apocrypha, they added stuff into it. But the Book of Esther is the absolute story of coming into your sovereignty.
Mm.
The Queen Esther who saves her people. And it's a Cinderella story, but she actually has to use incredible discernment and pull herself away for 3 days to come into her rulership.
Mm.
She is the queen of Persia, but she doesn't know how to be queen.
Right.
and she has to come into the kingdom for such a time as this. And it's usually translated as put on your royal apparel.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't like as much, but it is actually clothe yourself in your glory, in your magnificence, in your power.
In your sovereignty.
Yes. So sovereignty is a really lovely word for it. But I love the fact that without that, I wouldn't have actually checked it out, that it does appear, according to Strong's Hebrew lexicon, that it's a feminine noun.
Well, that is so interesting, isn't it? Simply because there it is in its original, written as a feminine noun, meaning to the writer,
yes,
something perhaps along the lines of sovereignty.
Yes.
And when we translate it into English, because English, as we have previously mentioned on one or two occasions, is an absolutely inherent and intrinsically patriarchal language, the word we've got
is kingdom.
Is kingdom.
Yes.
Which is a masculine word.
Yes.
We don't, for some reason, although everyone would understand the word queendom, we don't ever really seem to use it.
Well, we don't. And of course, we've associated queen with gay folk. And
well, I mean, we've got a queen right now. We've got, yes, Queen Elizabeth II.
We have.
And yet we still call our country the United Kingdom.
Kingdom. Yes, not the queendom.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So it is yeah, implicitly.
Yes.
Patriarchal.
Absolutely. Well, the Bible, as it is translated, is implicitly patriarchal. Because my job, is to go in and say, no.
Yeah. But because it's been translated into an implicitly patriarchal,
yes,
language, from a language which may well also have been implicitly patriarchal, but not necessarily quite so much.
No, and also, if you remember, the Hebrew was originally written without the vowels. It was just the consonants. So actually, you had to fill in the vowels yourself, and your word could change dramatically by what vowels you put into it. But after the diaspora, it was set in stone because everybody lost faith, you know, lost trust. If we're going to be spreading all over the world, we've got to have it all written down instead of trusting. Because fair enough, actually, because you can get an awful lot of Chinese whispers by passing things on if you don't have a structure to place it on, which is the reason I love Kabbalah, because it has a structure, a skeleton. Yeah. So writing it down, John Romer in his book Testament about the Gospels said the writing down of the Gospels was the first loss of faith.
Right.
And in a funny kind of way, I absolutely get that. But we have to have the written and the oral tradition really to work with, because the written gives us the skeleton, if we're lucky, and we can go into it and interpret it. Which brings us to the second question.
Oh, can I just quickly talk about that a minute? I'm intrigued. So for me, the way Kabbalah works with the skeleton, and then you, through your connection, through your listening to the divine, you get to hang the clothes, if you like, on the skeleton.
Yes.
What was written previously was there with only consonants and not vowels, would the approach have been similar?
Yes.
It would have been.
I believe it truly would, because the vowels are the clothing on the skeleton, the skin on the skeleton.
Right. Yeah, so absolutely, it is the first loss of trust. That's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
It happened after Rome destroyed the temple.
Right.
And the Jews left Israel on one of the many diasporas of these people. And in the Christian world, it was set in stone about 2nd, 3rd century. The Gospels, the four Gospels. But even so, even though they chose four Gospels out of the other Gospels, we have found most of the other Gospels. They still existed. Yes, they were buried. Yes, they were hidden. They were secret. They were sacred. Secret and sacred are the same root word.
Mm.
Again, it's this thing about going looking for it. The Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the Nag Hammadi Scrolls, that kind of thing. But even so, the fact that they put four Gospels is so relevant. That's the four levels on which you were taught to read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Literal, allegorical, metaphysical, mystical. So four Gospels. The first three Gospels are Jesus talking as Jesus, who is a very holy man, learning to be a holy man. The Gospel of John is Christ, not Jesus, Christ, the universal Christ speaking through the channel of the man Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And the universal Christ is applicable to every single being in the universe.
Mm.
Before Abraham was, I am, he says.
Yeah.
He's talking of Christ, Christos, the Logos, the blueprint, the pattern of creation. And that hasn't got a gender either.
No.
Jesus, in the first years after after his death and resurrection and then the ascension or whatever happened. We just simply don't know, but I'm happy to believe in it because miracles do happen. Jesus was always painted as a very androgynous creature.
Right. That's intriguing.
Yeah, and briefly back to the women at the crucifixion. What's really interesting is that Mary Magdalene, the first of the disciples, just waited. She didn't build cairns or campaign or shout or anything like that. She just waited because she knew that this was not the end.
Ah, then, okay, right.
She just knew something was going to be there. And, of course, when he comes out of the tomb in the legend, she doesn't recognise him because a soul, a spirit, you know, I don't think it was a human being that came out of the tomb. I expect it was a light. Who knows? Nobody will ever know. But the legend can be incredibly beautiful. But it was the women who told the men.
Mm.
And the men did not believe them.
Mm.
Yeah, and we have to sort of look at that and say, learn something from this.
Yeah.
It was the women who stayed and waited. They did not run away.
So in archetypical terms, it was reciprocity that waited.
Yes.
And action that went
running
off to
do
something.
Yes, or hide.
Yeah. I go back a minute to you say that the early depictions of Jesus were androgynous. Do you mean physical depictions or descriptions in the Bible?
No. The Bible wasn't written down, firmly set in stone until 3 or 4 centuries after, almost about the time when Rome was taking over. No, the wall paintings that we have.
Wall paintings.
We have wall paintings.
Okay, and it's presumably they are not of a blonde-haired, blue-eyed.
Oh paint. No! They're of a human-shaped being.
Right.
And then they develop into a shepherd.
Ah.
And again, it's still not entirely clear. And there are plenty of pictures of women with him, and the Euphrates scroll, which is the earliest scroll we've got. It's just a fragment of one of the Gospels. And it says quite clearly in the earliest text we have got, and Professor Mark Goodacre, who is my teacher of New Testament Greek now at Duke University, California, I think, told me this and showed me a copy of it. And it says quite clearly, the women and the wives of those who followed him. So, you know, he wasn't walking around with just male disciples.
Yeah.
But the feminine tradition has always been the tradition of the night, the darkness, the hidden, the power.
Mm.
And that's, of course, what the patriarchy is afraid of.
Totally. Terrified.
Yeah. Which does bring us neatly to the second question, which was the Witch of Endor.
Oh, yes. Okay. Tell us about the Witch of Endor.
There are two...
Tell us a story, Maggie.
Tell us a story. Well, let's start off with the fact that in Exodus, the book of Exodus, it says, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live.
Mm-hmm. Boo hiss. Guess why I'm not a Christian.
Well, the translation which first came out in the King James Bible, which was the time of the start of the witch trials, King James, who was the first king of Great Britain, you know, Scotland.
Didn't he sponsor Malleus Maleficorum?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Dear of him.
Yes, bless his little cotton socks. It doesn't say witch. It says the word it's in Exodus 22:18. The word is kashaf, which does mean sorcerer, and it is a feminine.
A sorcerer, witch, sorcerer.
Sure, but it depends what you mean by a witch. You see, a sorcerer is somebody who uses magic to change things, I believe. What would be your definition of it?
Somebody who uses magic to change things, which does not imply that they are in any way a bad person.
No, it doesn't imply that they're in any way a bad person. However, let me argue for it just for a minute on the grounds that I know quite a few sorcerers who are dangerous people.
Okay. You hanging out with the wrong people.
What I know of, or I used to know. So, which brings us to the question of the law, which is a bit of a digression, but the thing about law is nobody ever sets a law unless somebody's already doing it.
Right.
You don't make a law unless it's already being done.
Do you mean you don't make a law against something unless it's already being done?
Yes. Okay. You don't have a law against speeding on the motorway unless people are speeding on the motorway.
Yeah, fair.
So it is in a way an acknowledgement that there were women in those times who were magical. But let me take this neatly on to, I wouldn't call somebody who works with herbs and with spirit a witch. You call yourself a witch. Mm-hmm. I would call you a shaman, as you know. But if you want to be a witch, that's fine by me. But the
sorry.
That's all right. What have I said to make you laugh?
If you want to be a witch, that's fine by me. Yeah. Hilarious.
Jolly decent of me, isn't it? So patronising. Sorry, didn't mean it like that.
No, I didn't take it necessarily as patronising. Just struck me as absolutely hilarious. Simply because for much of my life, no, I didn't want to be a witch. I was just called a witch. But no, I claim it now because along with sorcerer, enchantress, magician, all these words, and there are so many of them, they have become maligned.
Absolutely.
And I don't have malign intent. And no. Also, strictly speaking, I'm not a shaman or even a practitioner of shamanism necessarily. Although, I mean, I guess I am more of a practitioner of shamanism, but shaman's a word you would never claim for yourself anyway. It's bestowed.
It's
but
like elder.
The point is, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But very much like elder. It doesn't belong to our culture. Whereas witch, sorceress, enchantress, those words do. Shaman belongs to the Tungus people of Siberia. Yes. Anyway, back to the law.
That's a very fair point. Several points about the law. Firstly, we know the Book of Exodus was edited, so we don't even know if this was an original law.
Right.
We know it was edited, and Genesis was also edited, and Deuteronomy was found at the time of the destruction of the first temple, which honoured the divine feminine. Mm-hmm. See the work of Dr. Margaret Barker for more details. Lots and lots of books on Amazon and a website. And it's very powerful stuff, this demonization of the feminine that did go on after the time of the second temple, without a doubt. And also, I'm going to run the parallel with the bring me back to the shall not suffer to live bit, will you?
Okay.
Run this in parallel with the a man shall not lie with another man, for it is an abomination, and they shall surely be put to death.
Right.
I've probably mentioned this before, but in those days you were married 6 months after puberty. You didn't have time in the Jewish faith and the Hebrew thing to actually work out a nice homosexual relationship, if you want to call it that. You were married. You probably were, if you were, you'd fancy your own gender, then who knows what happened, but you weren't living in a same-sex couple. Mm-hmm. And the law, if you look into the history of it, is very likely about the taking of young boys to the temples to be used as sacred prostitutes and raped. Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't have a problem against that. I don't have a problem with the law against young boys being systematically...
A law against it. Yeah, me too. I'm right there with that law.
And when you come to the time of when the Bible was actually set in stone for us in the Western world, there had been an awful lot of Roman citizens using rape as a punishment and a humiliation, male rape.
Whoa.
If you didn't like somebody, you gang rape them.
What humans? Just gorgeous.
Aren't we just... So, I don't know, but I would like to make it clear that the word is sorcerer. It isn't what we would term as witch, and we don't know what they mean by that. And we don't know when the law went in. So, we can question it. We have every right to question all these laws, apart from the 10 advisements, the original 10 advisements, which we talked about before. Anyway, the second one, the story of the Witch of Endor is in the Book of Samuel, 1 Samuel 28:7 it starts. And it's King Saul, who's a bit of a rotten apple, really.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, let's just say he's a bit of a rotten apple. And he has a prophet called Samuel, who's basically going around saying, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. Oh, for God's sake, don't do this. Please don't do this. Really, it's not going to work. And Saul's mostly ignoring him. And it comes towards the end of Saul's life, and there's going to be a really big battle. Mm-hmm. And Samuel is dead, and he has no one to turn to. So he goes to the high priest, and in those days, the high priest had a form of divination called the Urim and the Thummim. We don't know how it worked, but it was to do with a breastplate that had 12 jewels on it, 12 signs of the zodiac, because they did have the equivalent of telescopic stuff on the top of the first temple and the second temple where they looked at the stars. Mm-hmm. And he had got no answer from the high priest. It says that the Urim had not told him. mm-hmm. and he had no prophets who could tell him whether he was going to win the battle. So he went to the woman known as the Witch of Endor, and the word is a different word. It's Kashaf. No, the first one was Kashaf, sorry. This one is Alat Orb. And it means either the skin bottle of water for a water,
mm-hmm.
oracle, or necromancer.
Okay.
So it's basically somebody who summons the spirits of the dead, somebody who has mastery over the ability to summon the spirits of the dead.
Well, it only means that if it's necromancer. If it means yes. skin bottle for water or oracle, skin bottle for water as a positive, as a allied with the word water, could mean simply that she was scrying.
Yes, it means that she was a vessel.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So it all goes to this necromancer, this woman who can summon the spirits, and says to her, summon Samuel for me. And she goes, basically, don't be ridiculous, it's against the law. You're trying to trick me.
Right.
And he goes, no, I really, really, really need to know. I really, really, really need to know. And she goes, oh, okay then. And she summons Samuel. But as she's opening herself up to spirit, it is revealed to her who this is, which is the king who's made the law.
Right.
And she goes, oh my God, you've come here to trap me, to undo me. Which is about not having such a clear line as you were talking about in the last episode, because she wouldn't be afraid, mm-hmm. or she would have been told beforehand.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the relevance of that is, but it's valid yeah. somehow. And she brings Samuel through, and Samuel basically says, you're screwed, mate. You're losing that battle and you're going to die. Which puts Saul into total despair. So guess what? He goes out, loses the battle and dies. So I think probably the genuine moral of that story is maybe you don't want to know the future sometimes.
Oh, definitely.
So it is badly translated, but she is trying to be an honourable woman. She's saying, it's against the law. I'm not going to do that. You're trying to trap me. And she hasn't quite got her balance right.
Mm.
But it's a really fascinating story in the man who, and it tells you exactly what you need to know about corrupt patriarchy, which is somebody who says, you shall not do that except I will.
Yeah. Yeah.
So morally.
There we have it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And he doesn't learn any good by it. And probably he had a lot more chance of winning the battle if he needed to win the battle without going and finding out he wasn't going to.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's basically it. That's the story of the Witch of Endor. But she's not a witch. She's a summoner of spirits. Which could be a witch.
Which, yes.
Yeah, because that's
witch,
the
witch,
problem.
Witch is witch.
Witch. What is a witch? Mm. What do you call a witch? And people call me a witch.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's meant to be a derogatory term nowadays. And it shouldn't be.
Well, as basically the patriarchy is so utterly terrified by female power
mm.
that all forms of female power tend to be either denigrated as witch or slut. And, you know, I'm right there in the front row denigrating everything that Maggie Thatcher ever did. Mm. But she was called a witch for exactly that reason.
Yes.
And... you know, what could possibly be worse than being a witch? Well, being a hag. And that is the point at which your average woman steps the most potently into her power, because she no longer gives a rat's ass what the rest of the society and culture think of her. And, you know, that literally is the only thing worse than being a witch, is being a hag.
Oh, gosh, you're making me laugh, because my nickname from my best friend Fran in school was Mag the Hag.
Yeah.
And all the people in class called me Hag. In the upper sixth. Hag this, hag that. And I didn't mind at the time, except at college. Fran came down and she had a boyfriend in Cardiff where I was at college, and there was a big dance and they wanted to find out where I was at one point, so they got the DJ to say, would Hag come to the stage please? And I was absolutely furious. Well, I was 18, I can understand that, but how prophetic was that? I suppose
it was hilarious. Here we sit.
Yeah,
the Hag and the Witch dubbed as children. Oh my goodness.
Now but let me go briefly back to Exodus, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. That is different from shall be put to death. It's actually don't give energy to this.
Okay.
And I just think that's interesting that it isn't you must put a witch to death, which is what King James started to do.
Yeah.
It was don't give them your energy. And I think there is a possible interpretation of that, but it's probably me being slightly wanky bollocks and over-optimistic, as in do not go to another to get your power.
Yeah.
Find your own power.
Well, it would be lovely if that was what it meant.
Well, why shouldn't it?
Yeah, well, because some corrupt dude called Saul appears to have made it as a rule.
Yeah, but we're here to change that. That's what Kabbalah is about. It's updating the tradition as valid for the present day.
Right. So, okay, that's interesting, because I've heard you say that a few times, that and I absolutely know it to be true, that if a tradition isn't alive and therefore changing, it's not a tradition.
No.
It's a dead relic.
Yes.
But so, because, blah, 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 blah. So when I see questions like, what about the Witch of Endor?
Mm.
There is a bit of me that buys into, you know, I've grown to the grand age that I am in a world where the witch wound still motivates and is the fear behind much of how we as women in the West engage with the world. We have the witch wound. We have that thing that says, you go out listening to the herbs, darling, you're going to die. It might cost you your life.
Yes.
And that when, so there's a little bit of me that goes, oh God, someone's asking about the Witch of Endor. Is she suggesting that Maggie should have me put to death? That's, you know, there is that little tiny thread.
Yes.
And so if Christianity, if Kabbalah, if any of these things are truly traditions and they are alive and well and being updated, in this day and age, where certainly 9/10 at least, if not 99.9% of those who would self-identify as a witch or an enchantress or a sorceress or a herb wife or any of those things, they are mostly on the side of harmony and unity and beauty and falling profoundly in love with nature and trying to reconnect us to all that is well and good in this world. So do those kinds of laws get struck out, unwritten, or just ignored?
I think they fall by the wayside. Did you know that the word for left-handed is sinister?
Yes, I did.
You know, and a left-handed person was said couldn't be a priest.
Yeah.
Wasn't going to go to heaven. But that's gone.
Yeah.
It's not written down anywhere, but it was very much in the culture of ancient times.
Oh, definitely. They used to, when Christianity divided into Catholicism and Puritanism, and being a Catholic was illegal in this country, they called Catholics the left-handers.
Yes. Absolutely. And we just have to try and update and clarify.
Go on. Beg your pardon, it was left leggers, not left.
Left leggers, was it?
Left leggers, I think.
Left leggers.
Which is what Wee Willy Winky is all about.
Oh,
Wee Willy Winky running down the stairs. No, how is it? Upstairs and downstairs.
Inside and out.
There I met an old man who wouldn't say his prayers, so I took him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs.
Yes.
Took him by the left leg, says he's a Catholic.
Fascinating. God, Christianity has so much transform.
Yes, indeed.
But, you know, I'm called a heretic. I've been called a witch. I've had a fair, nothing like as much as somebody who identifies as a witch. But, you know, who do you think you are? How dare you do this? You know, I was asked to distance myself from the group, my spiritual group at one point, because I dared to do a mass on a Sunday morning. At a venue of a workshop. It was absolutely optional. I'm a priest, I do a mass. You know, so it's any heretic, the only thing that changes the world is a heretic. Because a heretic is a fresh, strong thinker who will update things.
Mm.
And we are very important.
So, strictly speaking, wasn't Jesus a heretic?
Yes. And the whole message that Jesus brought was the message of the Christ, which the love trumps law. And it's in the Hasidic movement, the ultra-Orthodox movement, loving kindness is greater even than truth. And there's a lovely story about a Hasidic Jew. Hasidic Jews, or very Orthodox Jews, will not touch any woman at all in case the woman is bleeding, which makes her ritually impure. And this Orthodox Jew refused to sit next to a woman on an aeroplane in case she was menstruating. And the bless them, the staff moved the woman into first class.
Ha.
But actually, when he went back to his synagogue in New York, his teacher told him off seriously because he was unkind. And it would have been no hardship to a truly spiritual man not to have to go to the synagogue for a couple of weeks and then go to the mitzvah before he could, because that man was putting law before kindness.
Yeah.
And actually, in the heart of Judaism, in the heart of Christianity, is how do you interpret the law with love? And the Dalai Lama summed it up in two sentences, the whole of the Gospels. Learn the law well so you know how and when to break it.
Ooh. There's another heretic for you, isn't he? The Dalai Lama.
I guess.
Well, totally. Yeah. I mean, absolutely standing up there against all that has been done to, I might be getting confused, but all that's been done to Tibet and to Tibet's people and to the Bonpo. And doesn't he have quite a bit to say on that subject?
He does, but he says it lovingly. He wouldn't go to war.
No way. No.
No. You know, it is what it is. It isn't good. What can we do to heal it?
Yeah.
And that to me is heroism. I actually went to Nottingham to spend a day listening to the Dalai Lama, which was just marvellous. He's a gentle, kind man. I actually wrote a whole book, The Miracle Man, about what would happen if the Messiah came today, in which the Messianic Presence, who is a man — I have a sequel in which the Messianic Presence is a woman, but it didn't sell enough for that to be published, unfortunately, maybe one day. But the Messianic Presence, called Josh, his mission is to work with the Dalai Lama to free Tibet. And the book is actually about how they do it.
Yay.
And how they harness the power of celebrity to retake Tibet. And it's actually quite a beautiful book. It's too long and nobody edited it, unfortunately. My publisher was going to edit it and he didn't in the end. So it's a bit too long, but it's still a fine book. But the whole tenet of any strong faith is you look at the situation. If you can do anything to help it, you do. And if you can't, you make a space for the person who can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we get too distracted, I'm sure there was at least one more question. Can you remember what the other questions were?
No.
I do.
Good, go.
John Dee and Queen Elizabeth. Somebody asked us about John Dee and Queen Elizabeth.
Yes, well, we're on 32 minutes. Do you want to do it now or do you want to do it next time?
Maybe we should. Yeah, it's worth a little longer.
I think it's worth a nice
one. Squeeze into 2 minutes.
Yeah. I also think it's very interesting how the universe tries to create balance, because the three longest reigning monarchs, Elizabeth, Victoria, Elizabeth, you know, trying to bring the feminine back in some way. Whether they acted as the feminine, I don't know. And actually, Victorian age did more harm to spirituality. Because the time of the Enlightenment, it's called the Enlightenment, the Age of Reason, actually really destroyed mysticism for a long, long time. Okay, it brought us into the area of science. And science is excellent and wonderful. And science is now, through quantum mechanics, is discovering extraordinary things which are deeply, deeply spiritual.
Mm. Well, it tries its best not to.
But. Yes, but we have the Victorian age where they even covered the piano legs because they might be sexy. You know, legs were sexy.
I know.
I really don't know how they went that crazy, but still. I still like the fact that three amazing, powerful women ruled for so long.
Yeah.
And perhaps they could have done more.
I think they so could have done more.
Mm.
Yes, though you see before you the body of a weak and feeble woman.
She never said that.
Does she not?
No,
it's good.
it's spin.
Is it?
It's spin. I actually Oh, I can't remember what programme it was I watched, but I followed it up with some research, and it's definitely spin.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll let her off.
Yes, the heart and stomach of a king. Yes. Yeah. Wow. But then, sometimes you have to speak in the language that people will understand too.
Indeed. Mm. Yeah, and you know, let's face it, they have been living in extraordinarily patriarchal times themselves, and we can only do what we can do.
Elizabeth did try to have religious unity. She tried to be tolerant,
yeah,
to both sides, but it wasn't working out. All her advisors changed her mind. If she could have been stronger, but to be a queen, she had to stay unmarried because her husband would have become the king.
Yeah.
And everybody would have kowtowed to him. Mm. I mean, in that, she was incredibly brave. Mm. Incredibly brave. But then, of course, Mary, the Queen of Scots' son, came along and called people witches. Oh, well. And moving swiftly on. You can't mend everything.
Yes. Yeah.
But you can mend your patch.
Indeed. May we mend all of us.
May we reweave the patch, which is our responsibility.
Yeah. Lots of love. See you next week.
Bye.